All right, go ahead and have a seat, everybody. Okay, so we are now here on case number 84986, Star Surplus versus 8th Judicial District Court and JGB Vegas as the real party in interest. I will mention again, as I did before the last argument, Chief Justice Stiglitz was unable to be present in person today, but she is listening to the arguments today, and she will be participating in the decision regarding them. So, Mr. Polzenberg, I see you're up here and already. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
5 minutes, please, Your Honor.
Okay. You know the routine on the light, so I'm not going to explain it to you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Justice Kadish. May it please the court, Dan Polzenberg for the petitioner, Star. The pandemic, COVID, and the coronavirus that caused the disease changed our lives and changed the world. And so this case brings up who's going to be responsible for certain losses. But I need to emphasize that this is a property policy of insurance. And as the Colorado court recently said, COVID infects people. It doesn't infect property. So let's look and see whether under this property insurance policy, there is coverage here for JGB. So the insuring clause, to oversimplify, insurance clauses, or insurance policies have two sets of clauses. They have the insuring clause that gives coverage, and then they have exclusions that take it away in certain circumstances. So there's the coverage clause in this policy, and it says perils insured against. This policy covers the property insured against all risks of direct physical loss or damage. And then there's a business interruption provision that says that it covers interruption of business operations caused by direct physical loss or damage. So the question here, the initial question is, what is direct physical loss or damage? Now, JGB comes in and argues that under Stonick there is that you have to read insurance clauses to grant liberally to grant coverage and exclusions narrowly so they don't take it away. No, that's not this court's standard. In fact, in Stonick, it actually says that you give words their ordinary meaning. You can't rewrite a policy just to provide coverage. So let's look at direct physical loss or damage. Not to be flippant, let me take damage first, but not to be flippant, I'm arguing the ordinary meaning of these words. In other words, I think damage means damage and loss means loss. Let's take damage first because sometimes they seem to be conceding what the standard is for that. Under the wealth of cases, especially under coronavirus, there has to be a distinct, demonstrable, and physical alteration. But that's not what we have here. There was no property damage. Coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2, does not alter the structure or dimensions of the property here. As I said, it infects people. It doesn't infect property. Damage to people is not enough to be property damage. Now, Caesar lists, and JGB to a lesser extent, lists the parade of horribles of all the things that different cases found to be damage or loss before coronavirus. But, you know, those were all different. And if you look at some of the cases involved there, it's, you know, we're talking about gasoline fumes, meth fumes, even cat urine. What the courts look to is the effect that it had on the property. The Third Circuit in Port Authority actually said, look, you can look and see that these substances permeated the property. They had a change in the property itself. It wasn't just that it was uninhabitable. It's that there was a change in the property. And in the Inns case in California lists asbestos and poisonous fumes as the things that are different from coronavirus. Now, asbestos is a funny thing because not all cases even agreed on asbestos. California says asbestos is covered. Third Circuit says it isn't because it doesn't permeate. It can simply be cleaned up. You know, it's like marbles on the floor. Is that a dangerous condition? Yes. Is it damage to the property, to the floor? No. It doesn't change the nature of the floor, and it can easily be cleaned up. So the courts overwhelmingly, and as Abe said to me this morning, it seems to be more cases every week, have said that coronavirus, under coronavirus cases, the presence or potential presence does not have a direct property loss. And they list three reasons. One, this is a worldwide pandemic. This isn't a problem that exists on this property. Two, it can be easily not remedied, cleaned. And the transmission goes down because of other factors like social distancing or wearing masks. So I've talked about all the cases that have come down.
So, Mr. Pulsenberg, how is that different from meth fumes, right? Those could be cleaned.
Well, the courts seem to, now I do not agree, and I raised asbestos, I do not agree with every single case that has come down before the COVID cases. I think some of them may have been wrongly decided. And the Third Circuit chose asbestos as an example. But you can't just assume because courts have said there could be something in the air that it's proper to consider coronavirus to be property damage. Here's what the Inns court said in California. The property did not change. The world around it did. And for the property to be usable again, no repair or change can be made to the property. The world must change. Put simply, plaintiff seeks to recover economic loss caused by something physical, not physical loss.
Mr. Pulsenberg, you would acknowledge that when we talk about it having to be something physical, which is, as you noted, used in the actual policy, that doesn't mean it has to be like visible to the naked eye. There could be like microscopic items that are still have a physical presence.
We did say microscopic is not enough. In the petition, I have moved away from that position, especially because of the list of cases that I'm talking about, where fumes, even though not seen, and smoke could permeate and change the actual substance of the property. But coronavirus does not do that.
So when they not only allege, but there's evidence in the record that COVID would be present on surfaces, certainly during the worst of it, and probably still to some extent, that it would be physically present on the property and that it required cleaning the surfaces, disinfecting. We're all aware of stores, restaurants, schools that were closed for days at a time to do some sort of remediation. So how would you distinguish that from cases or circumstances that would be covered?
Let me make a couple of points on that. Yes, of course, there could be fomite transmission from surfaces. And they're coming in and trying to make the case that there was actual presence on their property. They have an epidemiologist who's figured out that there's a 100% probability that there was, you know, I've been doing this 40 years. I'm a little worried anytime somebody says 100%.
Yes.
But it doesn't even matter. The case that I quoted from earlier talks about the presence or the potential presence. There's a causation issue there. Even if there weren't SARS-CoV-2 on their premises, they would still have been closed down to the same extent. So that's a causation issue here. Look, we all know this is a very strange case because we all know the facts. Justice Pickering was Chief Justice coming up with the rules during the pandemic. Justice Bell was Chief Judge coming up with the rules. We all know the problem. They complain that I cite cases that talk about what coronavirus is. We all know what it is. And I'll take that at face value. But it's
their complaint. I mean, you're in summary judgment. And what do we do with the fact that Judge Denton said there is enough here between the epidemiologist expert statements and the allegations and the complaint about physical presence of the virus in the property to create an issue that needs to proceed?
Two things.
Can you address that?
Yes. Well, it's summary judgment, so I have to take their assertions as true.
Right.
But
so you would ask us to disbelieve the experts?
No. I'm telling you it doesn't make a difference whether you believe the experts or not. There still isn't coverage here because there isn't direct physical loss or damage. For this purpose, for my motion for summary judgment, yes, you have to look at everything that they're contending. But this can't be a jury question. This can't be a jury question because all we're doing is looking at facts and which there isn't really a dispute on and applying it to the legal definition. This is like the federal insurance case where Judge Sturman put a coverage case to the jury and this court reversed. We know the facts. We have to decide whether there's coverage. I am, to borrow a phrase from Justice Paragiri, I'm eating into my reply time. So loss, what is loss? Loss has to be loss. It's the total destruction or deprivation. So as I say, damage is damage, loss is loss. They say, well, how can you have loss without damage? You can. Theft is the perfect example under this policy. Somebody could just steal what you have. But loss of use is not enough. You know, last month in another case, we talked about the difference between the value of property versus the value of the use of the property. Here we're looking at the same distinction. It can't just be an economic loss, which is the loss of the use. It has to be actual damage or loss to the property. Everybody has mentioned Couch in their briefs, but nobody puts it in their table of authorities. So Couch in chapter 148 gives the distinction between in two different subsections between physical loss or damage and intangible loss of use. This is not actual loss. Let me do the exclusion, because I think you could decide this case from the exclusion. There is a pollutant exclusion, and it says we don't cover pollutants, and pollutants is defined as smoke, fumes, hazardous waste, and virus. Now, this case, this court in Casino West said, oh, the absolute pollution and contamination clause was too broad. But in that case, Justice Douglas would have decided the case differently if that case had listed carbon monoxide. This one actually lists virus. So I think there's no coverage under the exclusion. Every case on that goes my way except for CJ. Yeah. it sounds like Dick Segerblum, Segerstrom. So but that case was different because that case had another policy, had another provision that says we will give you coverage if because of a communicable disease that you lost bookings. So I think the exclusion applies here. And John, I'm going to leave you one more.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. John Wilson on behalf of Real Party and Interest, JGB Vegas Retail Lessee, LLC. May it please the court. The critical issue confronting this court today, and something that I did not hear discussed in my friend's argument, is whether all risks policies, the broadest form of first-party commercial insurance available in the marketplace, which are issued without the absolute virus exclusion that was developed by the insurance industry years earlier, specifically because of the risk materialized by the SARS coronavirus in 2006, gives rise to a reasonable expectation of coverage.
Well, can you address the exclusion issue of the virus specifically being listed?
Certainly, Your Honor. So the Casino West decision really answers the question about the scope and breadth of this pollution exclusion.
Well,
so,
as Mr. Foldenberg indicated, it didn't list part of the cost.
It didn't, but the one thing that the court recognized in Casino West was that carbon monoxide was one of the types of pollutants that would be covered by the other terms in the policy. And what the court said was, you necessarily look to all the surrounding words in the language of the exclusion, including the environmental terms of art, like release, discharge, escape, dispersal, and so forth. And all of those
virus.
Things. Certainly, Your Honor. And virus is one of the things that can be discharged through traditional environmental pollution. For example, a wastewater treatment plant can disseminate virus-infected water out to the world, and that would be the same type of traditional environmental pollution that this court said would be embraced by that exclusion. The difference
but
is...
this isn't a CGL policy. This is a first-party policy. So release out into the world is not part of the coverage anyway. Like that's not what this is about.
Well, that's the nature of the exclusion itself, Your Honor. That's the way that it's framed, is that we do not insure pollution, and it defines pollution or pollutant or contaminant with this laundry list of words. And what the court said in Casino West is, if you use those environmental terms of art, like discharge, displace, et cetera, and also, like they did in the exclusion here, cite to the traditional environmental statutes with which we're all familiar, CERCLA and the like, then the presumption is that, or at least a reasonable policyholder could conclude that the purpose of that exclusion is to protect against the traditional environmental type of pollution. And the court recognized
that. What does that mean? What is traditional environmental pollution?
Toxic releases that infect, that companies release that address the environment writ large. So,
CERCLA,
for example,
the virus was in water, it would be covered, but if it's in air, it's not covered?
No, it's the nature of the release itself. So the exclusion focuses on the way in which things are disseminated. We are not insuring you to the extent that you have coverage that pertains to things that are released in an environmental context. And then it goes through a laundry list of the types of pollutants that would be embraced by that exclusion. There are many other ways to write virus exclusions in ways that would put a reasonable policyholder on notice that this is what a pandemic type event is what the exclusion is targeted at. For example, in the Circus District Court case where they talked about the pollution exclusion there, the policy was explicitly broadened. The exclusion was explicitly broadened to apply to things that necessarily impact human health and safety.
But,
as opposed to
but
this
counsel,
exclusion.
Isn't there a similar exclusion here where it says on page 196, of the record, bacterial infestation or any similar organism?
So there is a bacterial exclusion in the policy. I think I had it listed at page 61, Your Honor.
I don't know.
Probably in multiple places.
There is. And I think, interestingly, there is another biological exclusion in the policy that specifically refers to viral or similar agents or material. But it talks about the unlawful possession, use, release, or discharge. So STAR knew how to write virus exclusions into its policies when it wished to. In fact, there are many cases around the country where STAR actually used the Insurance Services Office absolute virus exclusion in its policies. It knew how to write those into its policies when it chose to. But the policyholders here had the wherewithal and deemed it sufficiently important to pay higher premiums to get policies without those exclusions, precisely because that's the nature of the business that they're in. The business that the entities before this court, both JGB and the numerous amici that support it, that are all part of or adjacent to the the gaming and hospitality industries that are central to the lifeblood of Nevada's economy, they all depend for their business on large groups of people congregating indoors for substantial periods of time. And so something like a virus that rendered property unusable or uninhabitable for its intended purposes would go to the entire value proposition of the industry writ large. And so, because of that, they bought policies that had much more limited exclusions in them, none of which rose to the level of or reached the breadth of the absolute virus exclusion that the insurance industry developed precisely to protect against this kind of risk.
And counsel, what do you say to Mr. Polzenberg's argument that the virus actually is harm, you know, damages people, not property? So the property itself wasn't damaged. It was just, you know, Governor Sisolak actually, you know, made this proclamation mandate that, you know, people couldn't congregate there, but that's not necessarily damage to property, is it? Is it, or is it, I mean, what's your take on that? Because it seems that it would be harmful to people, not property.
So I think, Justice Lee, that is a sort of a canard that a lot of courts have stated that is not borne out by the facts and evidence. And I'd go back to Justice Kadish's question for my colleague. The evidence in the record was that, in fact, the virus does damage property. Governor Sisolak's orders from the very outset of the pandemic recognized that they were being issued to protect against people, the damage to people and to property. The Nevada State Medical Association, for example, has filed an amicus brief with this court that walks through all the various ways that, in fact, the virus adheres to both surfaces and the air and necessarily changes and alters the property in such a way that renders the building uninhabitable.
Yeah, I think of rust. Okay, how is it like rust? Rust will get on the surface and damage property. Now, that's a tangible something you can see. How is this equated?
So two answers to that question, Your Honor. Certainly something like rust that you could see would unquestionably damage the property. It would physically alter the property. The science and the facts that were before the district court below are that that's exactly what COVID does. It, while you may not be able to see it, it is necessarily changing the surfaces and the air of property, and those changes are what render the property unusable, uninhabitable for its intended purpose.
It sits on top of it. And it's not like rust that deteriorates. And so that's, I guess, where my disconnect with your argument is.
Certainly, Your Honor.
Are you maintaining that it cannot be cleaned? That it somehow permeates the property so it cannot be cleaned?
It does permeate the property for a period of time. The Nevada State Medical Association walked through the level of remediation that would be necessary in order.
The Nevada State Medical Association in their amici brief said it can be cleaned. It's just constantly being reintroduced by more people coming into the environment. Not that it goes anywhere other than the surface. It's just cleaning only has so much effect if it's going to constantly have the virus reintroduced by more humans coming in.
2 points, Your Honor. They say it does affect the property itself, perhaps for a limited period of time, maybe 28 days, for example. But they do recognize that it could eventually, through extraordinary cleaning measures, perhaps be remediated, but then it is constantly being reintroduced. But they make 2 points. They say that's the one aspect on the physical property itself, but then also the air, which is property, as this court has said, the air within a building is part of that property. They also say that it physically adheres to and alters those surfaces.
But when you talk about the property being rendered uninhabitable because of the virus, I mean, that's, you know, what the Ninth Circuit and Circus talked about and said, now you're folding loss of use into loss of property, i.e. damage.
So that's an important distinction, Your Honor, and I think I appreciate you raising it. Starr's position, at least in its opening petition, did conflate two entirely different terms: physical loss and physical damage. And under this court's consistent pronouncements, those two terms need to be given their independent meaning. And while physical damage may turn on whether you can demonstrate that a physical substance alters, injures, or destroys your property, physical loss, courts have explained for decades, is something different. It must be given its independent meaning. And the meaning that is given to physical loss is the presence of a dangerous physical substance that renders property unsafe or unusable for its intended purposes. And the whole history of case law, whether it's meth odors, as Justice Bell alluded to, whether it's carbon monoxide, whether it's fumes, whether it's smoke in an outdoor venue like the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. All of these things are things that courts over the years have recognized is the type of physical loss that's covered under the business interruption part of a property like this. And what's critical for that, why that matters to this court, is that this court's consistent pronouncements have said, when interpreting an insurance policy, our goal is to effectuate the reasonable expectations of the insured. All of those, that decades of precedent, necessarily informs the reasonable expectations of insureds like JGB and the various amici that were supporting them. Those reasonable expectations, this court has said, are the first thing the Nevada courts should look at in interpreting insurance policies.
And let me ask you another question. Did these entities remain open during the subsequent surges in COVID after the governor's orders were lifted?
The evidence in the record was that there were subsequent closures after the government's orders. So, for example, I think the governor's first orders allowing businesses to reopen at 50% capacity went into effect a month or two after the initial orders. And there were subsequent closures after those orders had permitted reopening where businesses shut down again to get to, I think Justice Kadish asked this question, to the examples where businesses would close down for 2 or 3 days at a time in order to, again, go through the same process of remedying their property in order to make it habitable and usable for its intended purpose again. And importantly, I think, Your Honor, all of those things are the types of things that go to the question of what is the proper quantification of damages. Star may have an argument, and we're not even asking this court to decide. We're not asking this court to decide. The JGB and the 10 or so other amici that have all risks policies without absolute virus exclusions are necessarily covered. It may be the case that when we go to trial and we put on our evidence to demonstrate that we can satisfy the policyholder's burden of showing a physical loss or a physical damage, that a jury concludes otherwise. There was a jury in California a couple of months ago that ultimately concluded that the policyholder didn't meet its burden. There was a jury in Texas, the Baylor Medicine case, that concluded the policyholder did meet its burden. What's important, however, is that the proper standard be applied and that the jury be asked to answer the correct question that this court's consistent jurisprudence demands, which is that the reasonable expectations of the policyholder be the thing that are paramount. And those reasonable expectations, given the history of case law, are that physical loss and physical damage are two different things. So what Starr is effectively asking this court to do.
But they're both physical, right? I mean, yes, there's physical loss, but physical loss doesn't just mean you had to shut down your business. It means there has to be something physical that happened that caused that, doesn't it?
Certainly, Your Honor, and JGB does not dispute that, but the virus is a physical peril. The virus is a physical peril, an outside physical presence that infiltrates property and renders it unusable or uninhabitable or unfit for its intended purposes. And I think Starr's concession in its reply brief at page 9, which Mr. Polsenberg repeated again here today, is critical. After first conflating physical damage and physical loss in their opening petition, Starr conceded, okay, we'll give loss a definition. And the definition that they gave it was deprivation of property or dispossession of property. That's the key here. Now, they try to append a complete deprivation or a total dispossession onto that. But there's nothing in the policy that requires that. In fact,
sorry, I'm going to interrupt because we're almost out of time. Sure. And I just want to ask this. There's reference in the briefing and today to Governor Sisolak's shutdown order, which mentioned in the order the physical presence of the virus. Do you claim that that is somehow binding on us or it's some sort of a binding admission that governs as a factual finding?
No, not at all, Your Honor. I think the reason that we raised it was sort of as a rebuttal to the idea that Starr had suggested and adopted the rationale of certain other courts that the virus only harms people. That's not what the governor's order said. That's not what a lot of other state Supreme Courts
said. Hasn't our understanding of COVID changed somewhat since March of 2020?
It certainly has, Your Honor, and I think the Nevada State Medical Association's amicus brief gives life to a lot of that developed understanding of the science. And it's why Judge Denton below agreed that even applying a standard that Starr had inquired of him, that even under that standard, the facts and the science that JGB marshaled were sufficient to meet the definition that he had held JGB to for physical damage. Our request of this court is that we also recognize the independent meaning that must be given to physical loss and provide necessary guidance to the courts below for the few amici that are supporting JGB that had the foresight to purchase all risk policies without an absolute virus exclusion. All right. Thank you for your time, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Polzenberg.
Thank you, Justice Kadish. Yes, you need actual direct physical loss or damage. They could have bought insurance to cover intangible issues. They could have bought economic coverage. They could have even bought pandemic coverage, but they didn't buy those. They repeatedly say this is an all-risk policy, okay? The words all risk appear once, except for it happened to be the name of the producer of the policy. And it is in the insuring clause that I read to you. It's all risks of direct physical loss or damage. In other words, like the heading says, it's the perils insured against. It's not an every risk policy. They say we could have written an absolute virus. By the way, it's an absolute virus and bacteria exclusion. It goes further than the pollutant exclusion. But we said virus in our exclusion. They seem to be saying we could have written it better. We don't need to write it better. We just need to write it clearly. You covered Governor Sisolak. You know, Rust is an interesting point. In the Third Circuit case where they talked about what permeates and what doesn't permeate, they actually brought in water. So water can permeate. Abe sent me a note that said meth damages the walls, the property itself. Now, Mr. Smith is apparently more familiar with methamphetamine than I am. Hmm. A jury cannot decide coverage. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right. Thank you for your arguments today. That was very helpful.